The recorder has been beep booped. Congratulations, everyone. We're now recording a podcast.
Beep boop, 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 beep
I want baba doo baba rum bamboo.
Okay, so this week's title is from Ed Crawley. We've got The Grandfather Paradox.
Grandfather Paradox.
That's a thing.
I'm
from Futurama, isn't it?
Oh.
Where he goes back. Well, they all accidentally go back to Roswell, and Fry kills his own grandfather and then sleeps with his grandma.
Yeah.
Are we going down the time travel route, or can we?
We can do. I think that's what
grandfather
the grandfather
paradox
is.
Like the two of those do lean towards a time travel thing.
Oh no, we don't. We don't do time travel. It's similar to the Zero Theorem, where it's just someone's granddad.
Okay.
Just do my puzzles, do my sums.
Okay.
And solves the Zero Theorem. goes, oh no.
It's a modern day, it's a contemporary film about a granddad doing Sudoku.
And accidentally divided by zero.
Yeah.
Just exploding. And the problem is that, like, somehow this information gets out.
Yeah.
Or, like...
It's Jim Broadbent, the granddad. Mm. Yeah.
And Jim Broadbent is, like... So he solves it. There's an enormous explosion in his house, right? Mm. Killing hundreds of people. And now we follow, I want to say... I don't know. Who's good for this? Like, it's gotta be someone who's like in, like CDC, like Center for Disease Control or something, trying to quarantine the information that led to the Zero Theorem discovery.
It's all set in this old folks' home.
Yeah,
and it's the matron of the old folks' home, played by. I'm going to go for Cloud Atlas here. But,
okay.
What's his name? From Hugo Weaving.
And what's Hugo Weaving trying to do?
He's trying to get the information from Jim Broadbent.
Who's not dead.
Who's not... No, like this old folks home.
Right.
So Jim Broadbent doing his Sudoku and stuff. And, yes, somehow Hugo Weaving finds out that he's cracked the Zero Theorem.
He's like an old... He's a physicist with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Yes.
And sort of like somewhere in the back of his mind is... Oh, we're just doing the thing of Fringe. We're just doing the plot for Fringe.
Don't care. Like, let's go down this rabbit hole.
The sort of Roswell-style scientist who knows everything about every secret conspiracy and bit of science.
I don't think there's that. He's just doing Sudoku. He's never learned how to play Sudoku, so he's just writing a load of numbers down. And
just by sheer entropy, he gets it.
Yeah, just right. Just out of the blue.
So then how does Hugo Weaving find out that...
Hugo Weaving is some sort of maybe government agent who's come to...
Yeah, who's undercover. Who's undercover as the matron of this old...
To do what? Like, who finds out? If Jim Broadbent has no scientific background and just writing random numbers, you know what? A lot of people write random numbers all the time. What is the tip-off that this is Zero Theorem?
Well, one of the...
I've given you two options and you've said neither.
One of the old folks is a physicist,
right,
who then looks at this Sudoku but comes to the table after he's finished. He's like, "Oh, Jeremy, I've just finished my Sudoku puzzle. You wanna have a look at it?" And then Jeremy, the physicist man... played by Harrison Ford.
Right,
he's there and he
kind
looks.
The old wizard sort of goes, "Look at it.
Well, let's see what we got here." And then looks at the newspaper, he's got his Sudoku puzzle, and he just has a heart attack because he's like, holy shit, he's figured it out. And then he writes in blood from his lips, just like on the thing, he solved it.
Right.
Which is that when Hugo Weaving comes in, he's a government agent.
because as soon as someone writes in blood, he's solved it, the government gets involved.
Yeah. He solved it.
Right, so I've got a couple of questions.
Go on.
First one being...
I'm ready for him.
I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But in most Sudokus, there's one answer.
Yeah.
Which means that if...
I've already solved this question, Matt.
If so he got Jim it right...
Jim Broadbent and... never learned how to do Sudoku. Just
like numbers
just down. A load of numbers in the
okay.
boxes.
Okay. Second question.
Yeah.
If someone wrote, he has solved it, on a page full of puzzles, why would anyone go, oh, right, it's Zero Theorem? There's a very Occam's razor, guys.
Well, the physicist man, Harrison Ford, he had spent his whole life
trying
to figure out.
That's fine. But he's written that down. He solved it. On a page full of puzzles. Which, at this point, you go, well, yeah, he has. Or no, he hasn't.
Yeah.
About the puzzles.
Matt, I don't see your problem.
No,
not just a page full of puzzles. It's just that one Sudoku puzzle.
Right, and he solved it. Then someone just looks at it and goes, right, he solved it. He solved the puzzle.
Before he goes out, he tells Hugo Weaving's character about it.
Or he rips it off. This is only making more plot holes for me. But he rips off the Sudoku puzzle, hands it to Jim Broadbent, and goes, "Don't let them find it."
Okay.
Jim Broadbent is really confused as his dying friend writes, "He solved it in blood on the newspaper," and then dies. Yeah, he just sat there the whole time, and he pockets the Sudoku puzzle.
Okay.
All I want, right, guys.
This is the bit I've been waiting for, Tom. The bit where all of this makes sense for you to have one. Well, I say what makes sense. In a meta sense, makes sense to me why you've been making all these terrible decisions to find one scene.
All I want is Hugo Weaving to chase Jim Broadbent around an old folks' home.
That's where we were going.
Yeah. It was worth... like a Scooby-Doo corridor kind of thing going on.
Wasn't it worth it?
Yeah. If you want to see that, watch the Wachowskis film Cloud Atlas. It's a genuine scene.
Right, where Hugo Weaving chases Jim Broadbent around an old folks' home.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless Hugo Weaving doesn't know at first that it's Jim Broadbent. Nice. And he's interrogating each member of the...
Don't try to solve this.
He interrogates...
We'd only have heart attacks and then scroll in blood from our lips, he's solved it, and then die.
Trying to figure out what this movie is about or why it was even made is comparable to figuring out Zero Theorem.
So if you manage, good job.
Also, Hugo Weaving might just turn up out of nothing.
Up for no reason.
He's just popping by to visit his dad.
I'm a government agent. That's what I am.
I'm here to visit my dad. I just happen to be the son of the guy who noticed.
He's the son of the physicist. He's the son of Harrison Ford.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good writing.
Comparative ages.
So let's... That's good writing. Make it more coincidental.
Hey. Coincidences are a great, great literary technique.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. That was the Godfather paradox. The Grandfather paradox.
If you're Oscar Wilde, then yes.
Wow, okay. So, from Alex Not Safe for Work Keane, we've got Knife Jogger.
Knife Jogger.
I'm pretty sure we had that conversation with him.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Knife Jugger.
When him and Bobby were on and we couldn't stop talking about Blade Runner, I'm pretty sure we came up with Knife Jogger.
Razor Sprinter.
That's a great name for a film.
Brick Loitering.
Sludge Walker.
Now you're just going into Star Wars characters. Yes. Hey,
Simon Sludge Walker.
We're going to have to go and find Brick Loitering somewhere in these slums if we're going to find our way off this planet.
Come on, Sludge. Simon Sludge
Walker.
Our cousins have the cooler adventures.
Not gonna lie. They've got a spaceship and everything.
I'm looking forward to seeing Brick Loitering in Solo, a Star Wars story.
Brick Loitering. joining us for the cyberpunk episode of the Life's a Pitch podcast, we have Max Revels.
Hello.
Hi.
This is my cyberpunk theme. Enter the room. Smoke has billowed out through the door.
I thought you were giving Max a theme
so
song.
Did I.
I am. Yeah, I am. It's a cyberpunk entrance music.
There we go.
There you go.
It's a good...
Just loop that and put it over the whole podcast.
It's a good cold open, definitely.
Oh, so, man, I should have tried to do a cyberpunk 80s cyberpunk version of the gelato, the slasher pitch theme.
just that's the end of Seinfeld.
A cyberpunk synth version of our theme song is just Seinfeld. Okay, so from Mike Cello, we've got Programmed for Love.
Ooh.
Saucy.
Oh!
It's a saucy, saucy business.
So, Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Is a washing machine. No. It's the sequel to I Wish I Was an AK-47.
I think this is the sequel to Get Out.
Go on.
Where is this going?
So,
No, we're not doing this.
No, we're not.
Maybe Program for Love, so it's a teaching a robot to love sort of scenario, which comes to mind.
Okay.
So, or a computer program.
Is it like...
It's about catfishing.
Okay.
So a bit of software becomes sort of self-aware and launches into the world of online dating. So it makes all these profiles.
Right. Okay. So one of those bots who's on online dating who, like, you go on Tinder or whatever and you get a message that's like, I don't know, I never see one, but like, not even the bots will go near me. That it's like, oh, you're seeing like a saucy chap. Why don't you come to this link and hook up or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those, but the person who designed it has a little more flair. And this is in a pre-credit scene where this guy, this Russian guy, is like, oh, well, the KGB might want me to send this bot out, but I've got better things to do. I'm an artist,
I make programs,
and puts like starts putting a learning algorithm in it, and this bot starts.
You do the job you want, not the job you do.
Yeah, dress for the job you want. code for the job you want. So
code for the bot you want.
So this bot has a learning algorithm to help, ostensibly it's supposed to help it learn how to trick people into clicking the link more easily. But it's like, but what's the link, right? It's an advertise, like eventually these people would be put into like a pyramid scheme or something. I don't know how these scams work. I've never, funnily enough, I've never clicked a random link when, for a bot that sent me a message saying let's hook up.
Oh my god, we should. No.
So I'm gonna say it's like it's some kind of pyramid scheme. I don't know. Because also you see like xdating.com and it's like singles, sexy single mums dating,
yeah,
or whatever. And it's like, that can't be a successful business.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah.
Like,
it's doomed to fail.
It's targeted at people who want sexy single mums and not targeted at single mums.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Who's like, oh, I want a partner for life, and goes, oh, I think the place I'm going to want to look for my life partner is sexy single mums dating.
I think there's, you know, like a sort of Google algorithm that's getting sexy single mums and going, looking for young single men.
Maybe.
Go onto this website.
Unless the bot kind of becomes self-aware.
Mm.
And just wants to help single mothers find love again.
Well, I'm thinking its purpose in life, right, is to get people into this pyramid scheme or whatever. Like, it's to con these people.
I've come so up with it a starts, subgenre for this.
It starts trying to make itself into a romantic prospect, a real romantic prospect, rather than just a hey it's me thing. So it starts like talking to hundreds of men at a time, and formulating relationships with them, and then eventually they're like, why don't you meet me at this location? And they're like, okay, I'll meet you at this location. Little do they know that remotely this AI has set up brick and mortar businesses throughout the world. Where these people are being sent.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Because it's the final designation of this scam. But I don't know what this scam is, so I'm going to say they're, like, meat, like, grinder people. Like, it's like the bot has set up a thing where these people are going to be kidnapped and taken away.
No, I've got a subgenre for this, and that is, you know, high school teens,
right,
find anomaly. Like, I mean, I'm thinking of the Brendan Fraser movie. I think it's Encino Man, Encino Man.
Yeah.
And The Girl Next Door.
Wait, Encino Man's not about high school teens finding a thing. It's about a guy who's like a Neolithic, like a caveman, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but they try and pass him off as someone from the modern day.
Okay.
So, like the girl next door being like a bunch of teens hanging out with this former porn star kind of thing.
Oh, man. So what a scientific anomaly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, never happens. But, yeah, so I'm thinking this group of that's just kids from Stranger Things time,
right? And they're hanging out with a former porn star.
Yeah, yeah, basically. No, they're the kids from Stranger Things and a former porn star. She's in their friendship group.
It's a sequel to Girl Next Door.
Girl Next Door, yeah, the program for love. It's a thing, and yeah, she's just in their friendship group. So it's kids from Stranger Things. And Alicia Cuthbert from The Girl Next Door, and just looking at your computer, and like they accidentally click on one of those links,
right?
And it's kind of a catfishing thing because they're like, oh shit, like they're all sort of chatting in this chat room, to this weird sort of what's the test called? Turing test,
yeah.
Turing test lady,
So, like, do you think one of them accidentally clicks the link and it starts talking to them? And they're like, oh, Mike, you got to take a look at this. They're all crowded around this one laptop. Yeah. And then they all decide, okay, so what if we all click that link? Do we get the same results?
Yeah.
And they're getting, what they're getting is each one of them, it's like asking them that what their hobbies are and what they like.
Mm.
And sort of saying, you know, oh, yeah, I remember school. It's weird that you've cast the kids from Stranger Things in this love program for love thing. But
like, it's, I think, maybe I'm thinking a bit older, actually.
Okay.
So it's sort of like, we're thinking more Breakfast Tiffany's age.
We're talking sort of like, what's it, McLovin from? That kind of
thing. Yeah.
Superware.
Well, Girl Next Door kind of age.
Yeah.
So, Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Chris Mintz.
American Pie style.
Just the kids from Superbad plus Alicia Cuthbert, the girl from The Girl Next Door, just in a room over the computer, and they're all chatting to this this bot. I think they all take her on a date. It's what's her name, Alicia Vikander from Ex Machina.
Okay.
Playing, it's a sequel to Ex Machina.
What?
Where she's,
this film now confuses me.
Yeah.
What's happening? What's the end game?
I don't know. They all take the same robot woman out on a date,
right?
And yeah, and then just try and pass her off as a human. Because they all know the Why? Secret that she's a robot.
Oh, right. Hang on. I think I've got it. So this robot, in its algorithms, has arranged on this Tinder dating whatever to meet everyone at the same time and place.
Mm. Mm.
And has created itself a robot avatar,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like hacked a... or ordered itself a robot avatar to be downloaded into.
It's Alicia Vikander.
Yeah, it's Alicia Vikander. The thing is that the Russian hacker organization that has, like, this loosely tied into the Russian government, that kind of made this by proxy, has found out about it and now want it back because it's now an incredibly sophisticated piece of software.
Okay, so at high school they're being chased by Russian spies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're trying to hide this robot.
Yeah.
As Mr. Russian Bat comes going, clearly, Pubrus was my folly.
as a KGB agent shoots him.
And, I'm thinking, they do a sort of Home Alone style trick or trap thing to.
You've got a Home Alone the KGB.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Home Alone the KGB, much like in Home Alone 3, I guess.
Or the end of Skyfall.
Yeah. So they end up killing all the Russian agents, and there's
actually, I want it just for the sort of Home Alone bit.
Mm.
Just because it's quite innocent for the time being, but the traps are set of just crazy, like brutal, and
yeah, super violent.
it just takes a turn to ultra violence and back again without any.
Yeah, well, at the end, it's Alicia Vikander beating the just physically beating the shit out of the guy who was in charge of the project.
Gary Oldman.
Yeah, she's good. Just got.
But I made you.
She's just got some scissors, just stabbing into his face, and then blood splattered. I think that all the guys have got a sort of thing for her, and it's like, which one are you going to choose? And she's just like, Alicia Cuthbert.
I immediately lost interest in this film as soon as you said that.
Yeah, no, I was just like, yeah, I'm going to play with this trope of which one are you going to choose, lady? we're all sexy teens.
I'm actually, it was going, yeah.
We're all nerds. Which one are you going to choose? We're all nerds. We all helped you.
So this is like, weird science.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, and she just goes to Alicia Cuthbert, and they just walk off into the sunset.
There you go.
Yeah.
Towards Russia.
Yeah.
To take them down.
Into the sunset.
Yeah.
Towards Russia.
Yeah. The northern sunset. They're in they're in Croatia.
It's set in Croatia.
Yeah.
Post credit scene. They're on the trek to Russia.
Mm.
And who turns up but Robert Downey Jr.
Mm.
And we're linking Weird Science and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and this film together.
It's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Program for love.
Yeah.
There we go. Thanks, Mike Cello, for that one. Facebook is Strike Comedy, and SoundCloud for the podcast
is just Strike.
Just Strike.
So you can find our podcast there. Also, you can find the Sheffield Reviews podcast, Loose Cannon, if you want to expand your comedy podcasts and Sheffield-based podcasts. And I'm just saying words at this point.
So, yeah, Loose Cannon podcast is really, really funny. I've listened to a few episodes. Also, Strike podcast as well.
Strike podcast.
Fantastic.
Look on Facebook for the Strike. You can find out when we're doing shows. Got a bunch coming up. And we have an Instagram as well.
What?
Yeah, Strike's got an Instagram.
Oh my god!
I think we follow it. So if you could probably go just.
We follow it. Yeah, it's Jenny that runs the Instagram.
Yeah, if you go to Life's a Fit Show on the Instagram and then you click thing people we follow.
If you want to follow Strike Comedy on Instagram, you got to go through us.
Well, I don't trust anyone's knowledge of where to find it. So
I'm currently looking it up.
Oh god.
There's that. We've got Twitter. I've got Twitter, which I don't check or use. So if you want to scream at a void, tweet me at that. I see stalls for time. Instagram, we are Strike Comedy.
Strike Comedy.
Strike
on
underscore
Instagram.
Comedy, yeah.
Cool.
So give us a like on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite cyberpunk film?
I don't.
Or story? Because I don't think cyberpunk's made it that far into Hollywood.
No.
Like, no.
We really only got Blade Runners 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's it.
Fifth Element is cyberpunk.
The Matrix.
Yeah, Matrix is definitely cyberpunk.
I feel there's a bunch of films that kind of dabble in it, like there was Ex Machina.
Oh,
it's not
yeah,
full cyberpunk,
yeah, yeah.
But it kind of...
Tron?
Yeah.
Cyberpunk. Like, Hackers. Definitely Hackers.
Yeah.
The 90s film, terrible 90s film Hackers. Where they like the representations of the internet are absolutely hilarious, but it like you're zooming between buildings made of information. But it's definitely got that this sort of like underground subculture of people with mohawks, and they're all dancing in this club because some people who run the club are good at hacking. That's like the thing. Like everyone,
dance clubs is a definite trope of yes. Cyberpunk. Fetish dance clubs.
Yeah, yeah. Usually,
I'll even put the fetish at the beginning because I'm pretty sure in cyberpunk films there's more fetish dance clubs than actual dance clubs.
Well, usually it's
like
subculture. It doesn't really matter what it is as long as it's subculture.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like as long as it evokes sort of like some kind of underground. Like, this is a world that exists, but you don't know about it, kind of, like...
So we want, like, the very first furry hacker film.
absolutely.
There is a title which we can do that with.
Yikes. Let's not.
We've got Robocop, Terminator, Dredd.
Dredd, yeah, I was going to say Dredd's fairly serious in that one.
Cowboy Bebop be considered cyberpunk?
Oh, I think it might be on here. Maybe?
We don't count animes.
No. Well, Ghost in the Shell as well. That's pretty cyberpunk.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of animes,
like Blade.
Actually.
Would you say... No, it's not very cyber.
No, that's...
That's goth punk, isn't it?
Yeah, that's sort of fantasy. Urban fantasy.
Yeah, I suppose. It's just like vampires are so weird.
They don't fit into a... they fit into, like, genre, and that is, like, goth.
Yeah, vampires are weird.
Well, I think at this point they're kind of, like, genre putty. Like, they'll shove into any hole you can fit them into.
Yeah, you can, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if vampires turned up in the Avengers universe. I mean, they can. I think they have.
I mean, like... Well, you mean the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah, as in, I think there was definite vampires in Daredevil Season 2.
Maybe, I know there was
kinda.
There was a Batman cartoon where the Dracula turned up, like, as in the Big D.
The Big D.
Batman, like, DC do have a Dracula guy and a Man-Bat and a Batman. They have all three of those things.
I would say Cyberpunk, sort of Batman in a way.
Let's go for tropes you look for in Batman. Obviously, Batman Forever.
Yeah.
Not Batman Forever. What's it called?
Batman Beyond.
Beyond is set in a cyberpunk universe. That's for sure. It's basically okay. So let's go with tropes, right? Like, so heavily urbanized futures.
Yeah.
Usually
robots.
Yeah.
Usually
or some form of
not
cybernetic.
Always. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Cybernetic
enhancement. Yeah, yeah. For sure. Usually dystopian.
Dystopian is also some internet allegory.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Like some sort of spanning thing of everyone.
The
kind of
net.
Goes. Yeah,
the way like using the internet to interface with the world in a way that we can't.
Yes.
So everything is net integrated. So you can open a door by hacking it.
Yes.
You know, you can turn all the lights off in a building by hacking them.
Yeah.
Whereas in like you, Ocean's 8 coming out soon, they're not going to do that. Mm. They're not going to hack the lights off.
Hacking is magic.
Pretty much,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hacking is magic. Yeah, absolutely. And it, just like magic in fantasy films, it plays by its own rules.
Yeah.
Like you can't just do anything with it, but they have to lay out the rules of what you can do with it before. But it's a little more intuitive. Like with magic in fantasy films, you have to lay out what the spells can do and also their drawbacks and all that stuff. Whereas with cyberpunk, there's a little more intuition going into sort of where
there's a lot more basis in real life.
How much you can do, like there's you intuit, oh, that wouldn't happen, or yeah, that still feels believable. So what else? Usually a lot of like leather.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like and studs.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, again, it's sort of counterculture. Stuff.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And that's the punk part, really,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
There was also a another allegory, like sort of wealth management. Like you've got the really shiny, fancy
corporate buildings.
Yes.
Oh, corporate. It appears a lot like corporate stuff.
Yeah, corporate power having run rampant.
Yeah. Corporations are the new gods.
Yeah. 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 They control exactly what's around, and then beneath that a sort of like slum like existence in the kind of underground bits. Like there's in Dread, I think you've got like the cities are like huge entire tower blocks, right? Mega cities. So mega cities are like countries or continents?
Mega cities are like, I think Mega City 1 is the entire Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. And then the tower blocks are essentially the equivalent of cities. And then within those are independent cultures and independent problems and governance and that sort of thing. The existence within those varies between like, oh, we've got a lovely penthouse suite and some guys at the bottom who are in the stink pits where all the trash was thrown they have to live out their existence picking the scraps from the stink pits to recycle and send up to make slushy
shake.
I think
there's a whole thing of wealth being not what it was, or like the fact that like wealthy people now have all the technology and stuff like that. In cyberpunk, it's kind of inverted. It's like all the wealthy people have natural things.
Yeah, they can afford a tree.
Rare, or like a proper sheep. and yeah. not an electric one.
Yes.
It's
fucking hell.
Yeah.
Do they?
What?
Do they?
What?
Do androids dream of electric sheep?
It's a question I don't want to talk about, really. For once,
I've watched the movie and it doesn't answer the question.
Well, that's why they call it Blade Runner, because it doesn't ask the question.
Does the book answer the question?
I don't know. It might just be about a dream about electric sheep.
In which case, if an android is doing that,
yeah.
then yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a bloke dreaming of electric sheep. They're like, yeah. Oh, maybe androids might. I'm not sure.
No, so we don't, because we don't know whether it's an android, the question is,
yeah.
do androids dream of electric sheep, or is that a human that's doing that?
The main man does have a dream of electric sheep at one point. We're not sure, though, whether he's an android.
Because as far as I understood, there was just a scene with a unicorn, and that didn't look like an electric sheep to me.
No, it looked like an electric unicorn.
And yeah. it proposes that electric sheep are in fact unicorns.
Which, you know, a misnomer, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to call something an electric sheep, make sure it's a sheep first.
We forgot what sheep look like.
In the far future.
Do they look like horses with horns?
Next to the Coke billboard, we forgot what sheep were.
Too busy designing this Coke billboard to figure out what sheep were.
Yeah.
Got an image of like them sat together and one of them go, I'm working on the Coke billboard. And someone goes, shit. Was it Dave? I don't remember sheep.
What a sheep. It's like, oh no, man, you don't want to get into that music. You don't want to get into that culture. They're all sheep down there. And he's like, what? They're all what?
What are you talking about, Dave?
They're all sheep.
What's a sheep?
Oh, it's someone who follows blindly in other people's wake.
He's like, oh, don't skip into that, Steve. Do any more smelt burnt toast?
Haven't you read my book, Are Androids Actually Electric Sheep?
Are androids people who follow blindly in others' wake and the wake of cultural trends? You not read it? No, Philip, I haven't. Now get back to the design of this bloody Coke billboard.
Got another mile of it to go.
It says cock.
Oh, man. Dave and Philip, two of our own cyberpunk characters.
We didn't make up Philip.
Yeah.
His surname. K. Dick.
God, it was Philip K. Dick that wrote that book. When you said Philip, I was like, that's a hilarious name for a guy in a cyberpunk universe. Philip.
What a stupid name.
That's another trope as well. They've all got weird fucking names.
Yeah.
Mm. I know, like, they've all got nicknames, so it's not...
Yeah, it's all aliases. It's not... Mm. A Ready Player One.
Oh.
Cyberpunk movie.
Yeah. It's not out yet, though, so we can ignore it.
It'll be out.
And then when it comes out, I'm going to ignore it.
I'm not. I'm going to go see it 5 times.
Oh, why? You don't give him the satisfaction.
I really want it to be trash.
It is going to be trash.
Yeah.
Because the book is trash.
Yeah.
Like, the book is fun, but it's so much trash.
Yeah.
Like, someone pointed out on Twitter, I think it was, there was a series of posters which are just like Ready Player One
Holy
posters that are just
fuck.
other film posters. And it's just like, this is a perfect... I like these posters because they're a perfect example of what the film will be.
Mm.
Reference with no understanding of something, anything deeper about the properties that they're referencing.
Yeah.
It's just... There's nothing to do with the... There's no similarities between Ready Player One and Labyrinth, which they did a poster of. They just took the characters, the anime-looking shitty characters, and put them, just stuck them wholesale into the Matrix poster and the Labyrinth poster and the Blade Runner poster.
And I think
it didn't even look that good. No, the posters.
I think they've just perfectly crystallized the internet.
Yeah, just reference.
With no deep understanding.
We all know that person who can only communicate in memes. Like, we all know that person whose entire sense of humour is just saying what the text on a meme would be.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the cyberpunk genre sorted. We've solved it.
Solved the cyberpunk
We've
genre.
Solved the mystery. Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Life's a Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.